The National Catholic Register is the essential and reliable source of news and views for Catholics. Subscribe today. Go to EWTN.com and click on the link for The Register or call 800-421-3230.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, we'll talk with EWTN's President and CEO Michael Warsaw about the one-year anniversary of the Register joining the EWTN family. And in breaking news, we'll also talk with Michael about the impact of the HHS mandate on EWTN. In our second half, Dan Burke will talk with Register journalist Thomas McDonald about his recent article on the Susan G. Komen Foundation, along with the recent flip-flops after some pressure from Planned Parenthood. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Dan Burke, Executive Director of the Register.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
Always a pleasure, my friend. And Dan, today we're delighted to bring on a very busy man, our own Michael Warsaw, the President and CEO of EWTN. Welcome again to the show, Michael. And first of all, the good news, congratulations on the one-year anniversary of the Register with EWTN.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's been a great year. Bringing the Register into the EWTN family has brought, you know, many blessings to EWTN and hopefully many blessings to the Register family as well. All signs are pointing upward for the Register. You know, subscriptions grew last year by nearly 15%. That's a remarkable milestone for a print publication in this day and age. I was joking with someone recently that we have to be the only newspaper in existence that actually had a growth in our subscriber numbers. Thanks be to God, that's a great thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, another great area of impact is that we had 10 million page views on our website this past year, which is about double the prior year, about 4 minutes average time, people reading each of those pages.
Wow.
So that is a lot of time of Catholics absorbing faithful news content. So
that's terrific. And I think as regular readers of the print publication and the online side know, you know, we've certainly put more emphasis and more resources into the editorial side of what we're doing. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter whether it's delivered through print or online or mobile device. It's about the content. It's about the reporting. And so I'm really pleased with some of the directions we've moved in. We've got some exciting things to come in the months ahead. And, you know, I think we're very, very happy and excited that the Register has been part of the family for a year now, and we look forward to continuing the relationship going forward.
Michael, I know that in your position, you speak with church leaders practically every day. Can you tell us what they're saying to you about the acquisition of the Register?
It's been very heartening to me to hear from, you know, people at all levels of the church, cardinals, bishops, you know, lay leaders within the church, how grateful they are for EWTN having stepped in and rescued the Register, and our work allowing the Register to continue and to grow and to be the publication of record for the church in America. And, you know, universally, I've heard their support of what we're doing and their appreciation for the content that we offer. I recently had the chance to be at a gathering of about 500 key Catholic leaders from around the country, and over the course of a weekend, in a number of presentations, there was almost no presenter who stood up, who at some point or another didn't reference either the Register or EWTN in some form or another. So I think the impact that the Register is able to have on the church today and informing people about issues of the day is tremendous, and it's growing, and all of that is a great, great blessing, I hope, the church, and is great for us to be involved in.
Sure. Obviously, it's the reason why we do this radio show, is to highlight the strengths of the Register and how we can work together to bring the news that people really need to hear.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and I think it's important that we remember that within the Catholic context, within our approach to news, there's a catechetical dimension to reporting news. I think if you do it the way that we do it, you can help really share with people what it is that the church teaches and to help them grow in their faith and their understanding of their faith. And so I think the Register brings a new component to that, and it's been great to have as part of the EWTN family.
Speaking here with EWTN's President and CEO, Michael Warsaw. Michael, there is an urgent matter at hand that we wanted to cover while we have you with us today. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening with this HHS mandate? It's certainly all over the news, and now how it's going to impact us here at EWTN.
Right. Well, certainly back on January 20th, the Department of Health and Human Services, through Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, imposed a mandate upon all religious institutions with regard to certain coverages under the Obama health care plan. And what this has done is really force EWTN and other faith-based organizations, Catholic and non-Catholic, into a position where we are being required to, first of all, inform our employees who are covered under our health plan about access to contraception, sterilization, and abortifacient drugs, abortion-inducing drugs, ultimately where we will have to pay for those services and procedures under our health care plan. If we choose not to do that, because those are indeed a violation of our conscience, they're obviously procedures that Catholics consider to be illicit and immoral, we can't go along with that. Well, if we choose to provide a plan that doesn't cover those or to not provide health insurance to our employees, then the government will step in and fine us some $600,000 in the first year in the case of EWTN and increasing fines over the coming years. So it's really put EWTN in a position where we had no choice but to seek relief from the courts. And so for the first time in our 30-year history, we chose to file a lawsuit against the government in U.S. District Court here in Birmingham on Thursday, February 9th. And we did so asking the court to really review this and to do so on constitutional grounds, that what the government has done is really to force EWTN to say certain things that are contrary to our beliefs, and that is coercion, it's forced speech, it's a violation of our First Amendment rights as individuals and as an organization, and it also is an interference in our right to religious liberty and freedom of religion. So we're asking the federal courts to intervene and to stop this unjust mandate that's been imposed upon us and the faith-based community. And really, beyond the faith-based community, it's also an issue that individual business owners who are Catholic or people of other faiths who have these same convictions, they're being forced to act contrary to their conscience on these things and to provide these same sort of services. So we believe that it was a moment when EWTN had to step up as a Catholic entity and say, enough is enough, and we need to put an end to this and ask the courts to do so. What we're seeing now over the last 48 hours of this, as the president and the administration is really been impacted by the public outcry of this and the great leadership of our bishops around the country.
So, yes.
By last count, some 160 bishops who issued statements directing their priests to talk about this with their people. Cardinal-designate Dolan of New York, who as the president of the Conference of Bishops in the U.S. has been really tremendous in pushing this issue. The administration seems to be trying to come up with a compromise, but I think our concern is that we can't compromise our mission. We can't compromise our beliefs. There are some, I think, in the administration who think that it's easy to compromise away these things. No, we'll just work it out. And I think they just don't seem to understand. We can't compromise on our values. We can't compromise on our moral principles. And so I think we have to wait and see, of course, what the president and the administration proposes as an accommodation to the faith-based community.
Sure.
But I'm very, very skeptical, particularly given this administration's history of flip-flopping and breaking its promises to the faith-based community. Cardinal Dolan, even in the last several days in secular media outlets, addressed this issue where he had certain assurances in November from the president about this issue, and that in the end, the president broke his promises. The president did not live up to his word on what he had promised Cardinal Dolan in their prior meetings. So I think those of us within the Catholic community who are watching this very closely and who are impacted by this very closely have to see what it is that the administration might propose as an accommodation and determine whether or not that's acceptable or whether that's just simply shuffling the deck chairs and offering something that really doesn't address the core issue here.
I was struck by two things in the press release where you were quoted as saying a few things. One is, I'm so glad that you used the term abortion-inducing rather than the kind of insider term abortifacient, which might lose some people, and we certainly want to be as clear as possible. So I'm so glad that you did that. But the other thing that I noticed was the legal term forced speech, which is really a lot about what this is all about.
Exactly. I think the administration and certainly the Department of Health and Human Services has really been saying this is about contraception, this is about access to health care services for women. Well, in fact, the spokesperson for Secretary Sebelius took me on in some of my comments yesterday, which I take as an affirmation that we're doing the right thing, in saying, well, these aren't abortion procedures. This is contraception. Well, the administration and HHS wants everyone to think that this is just contraception. It's not. This also includes abortion-inducing drugs, and they cannot get away with that by trying to lump it all into what they think is a cleaner term of contraceptives. So that's, you know, that's a problem, and that precisely leads to the constitutional issues of forced speech.
Mm-hmm.
By mandating that this August, EWTN, you know, on EWTN's letterhead, we'll have to tell our employees where they can get access to contraception, sterilization, and abortion-inducing drugs. The government is intruding into our organization and forcing us to say things that are contrary to our values. That is completely and totally contrary to our First Amendment right to free speech, and that's the basis of our lawsuit against the administration on this issue.
Yeah, going to what you're saying there, I know that Cardinal Wuerl appeared today on one of the secular news programs, and he said at one point, well, this would be like the government coming to you, your news organization, and saying, well, on Wednesdays and Fridays, we want you to report these stories. And, of course, the news people were just totally, you know, dumbfounded. They didn't know what to say.
Mm-hmm. But it's true. That's precisely what the government is doing. And, you know, I think in the attempts to reach some sort of a politically expedient solution on this, because I think the administration feels the pressure and understands that it's overreached on this and has really alienated large segments of the faith community, not just Catholics, but across the spectrum. You know, I think they're at least floating all sorts of proposals about how mm-hmm. they can avoid having the religious employers have to do these notifications
right.
and so forth. But at the end of the day, if the administration is forcing us either directly or through a surrogate like our insurance administrators or insurance companies
mm-hmm.
To communicate this, it still leaves us at the same place. If the administration at the end of the day is still saying, well, you're still going to have to pay for these things, even if you don't have to, you know, communicate them directly, that's still not acceptable. So there's certainly, at this point, pending some very surprising sort of announcement from the administration in the coming hours or days, there is no indication in anything that we're seeing and that's been floated so far that would lead us to believe that we would not do anything other than to pursue the suit and see that to its end.
Right.
And I think, you know, for people who are listening, people need to be very, very aware of this. They need to be very careful as they read this or as they read any language and suggested accommodations that come out,
mm-hmm.
And not to buy into spin or deliberate obfuscation and confusion of the issues that might go on. At the end of the day, if these mandates still require employers to give this sort of notice to employees, if at the end of the day they still require employers to pay for these procedures under their health care plans, nothing has changed. And we're really skeptical that anything other than the full and complete rescission, withdrawal of this mandate is really probably the only real thing that can happen here that will satisfy the needs of the faith community and particularly the Catholic community.
Understood. Michael, how can our listeners support EWTN in this effort?
There's several things they can do. One, pray. Pray and fast. First and foremost, we need prayer. Secondly, while the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, great group, is supporting us and representing us on a pro bono basis, EWTN is certainly coming under attack from many different quarters about this. And so I would certainly encourage our audience to continue your support, your financial support of the work of EWTN. Now more than ever, the mission of EWTN is essential, and so we need that support to continue what we do. And if people are interested in doing so, they can also go to the EWTN.com website, and there's a link there off the homepage to the HHS mandate issue. Through that, they can go to the Beckett Fund website, and there's an online petition there that they can choose to sign on to and help communicate the views of the Catholic community and the community of believers at large to the administration that this mandate can't stand and it needs to be withdrawn.
Well, we certainly want to remind everyone, please keep all of us, the EWTN family, in your prayers as we fight this battle for our organization and on behalf of many others in the church who will fall prey to this legislation. Michael, personally speaking, I have always been very proud of EWTN, my association with the network, and all that we do, but never more than today.
Thank you, Tom.
When we return, Dan Burke and Thomas McDonald bring us up to date on the Susan B. Komen Foundation and Planned Parenthood. And I got to tell you, it's not pretty. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Are you concerned about the way our nation and our world are heading? Are you looking for the truth behind the issues of the day? Do you need support in standing up for life, the family, and our Catholic faith? Then join well-informed Catholics worldwide who depend on the National Catholic Register to address the most compelling questions of our time. Now part of the EWTN family of services, the Register is a trusted source of news and views with an unwavering fidelity to the Pope and the Magisterium. Get the in-depth analysis you need explaining what happened and why it matters for Catholics who engage in the culture to serve Christ. To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Dan, it's been a bit of a roller coaster this week with the HHS mandate and also with the Susan G. Komen Foundation's support of Planned Parenthood. It's been, you know, now it's on, now it's off, now it's on. I am so glad that we have the excellent reporting of Thomas McDonald here with us to help connect the dots.
Well, I think Thomas will be able to do a good job with that. He wrote a piece about 9 days ago that was hailing the decision to cut ties to Planned Parenthood. Their facilities are not equipped with mammogram abilities.
That's correct.
So it's a bit of a false connection there, but there are other reasons why Komen rightly made that decision initially. Thomas, can you get us up to speed? Tell us where this started, and then let's talk through where it is today.
Since it has been such a roller coaster, just the one-line summary of this would be short-term loss, long-term win. It was a major propaganda or public relations defeat, if you want to look at it that way. But based on some of my sources, that some of them are anonymous, the funding to Planned Parenthood is unlikely to be restored. I would not say never, but let's go back to how this whole thing opened up. And it was, what my source said was that Coleman wanted out of the culture wars, and he didn't want to say that on the record, but it was during a meeting with Liz Thompson, who's the president of Coleman, and she had said that she spends 50% of her time dealing with Planned Parenthood-related issues and just was tired of it, wanted out of this, wanted to remove Coleman from this, wanted to separate Coleman from Planned Parenthood. That was always the end game. So they crafted this policy that no organization under criminal investigation could receive any kind of grants or any kind of money from Coleman. That was not going to be made public, okay? Coleman said that quietly to Planned Parenthood as a courtesy to a partner that the money that they'd been getting annually, which fluctuated between about $600,000 and $700,000 a year for quote-unquote breast screenings, which we can talk about in a minute, that would cease after, and this was not correctly reported at first, after the five existing contracts played out. Now, there were five grants that stretched throughout 2012 and slightly into 2013. Once those were done, that was it. Planned Parenthood would not be getting any more money as long as they're under criminal investigation. Now, this isn't just, there's two layers of investigation. There's the Stearns investigation in Congress, which is, they say it's politically motivated, but it's basically a routine investigation into how government money is being used and misused. But there's also multiple criminal organizations in Arizona, Indiana, Alabama, Kansas, and Texas for a whole range of criminal acts, failure to report child abuse and statutory rape, misuse of health care and family planning funds, failure to comply with parental involvement laws regarding abortions. There's a whole range of criminal investigation being conducted by attorneys general at the state level. So that was this whole story. Coleman told this to Planned Parenthood as a courtesy and was not putting out a release about it. Coleman went nuclear, and they used Twitter, they used Facebook, they used their mailing list to rally the troops, and it was a tidal wave that Coleman should have expected because they turned on Coleman like a rabid dog, and they attacked them and attacked them and attacked them personally as a group, as a charity. They were using it to whip up rage against the pro-life forces, against Coleman. They were using it to fill their own coffers by saying, divert your money, basically. They didn't say it literally, but, you know, if you're upset with this, donate to us instead. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and they raised quite a lot of money on the back of this Coleman decision.
Well, this is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're here with Thomas McDonald covering the flip-flop of the Susan G. Coleman Foundation with respect to their ties to Planned Parenthood. So, Thomas, they made the initial decision. Public pressure forced Coleman to reverse that decision. But an interesting aspect of this is that a high-ranking official, Karen Handel, who was their vice president for public policy, resigned. What was that about?
She became the focus of the issue because she is a Republican and she is notably pro-life, so all the rage was being directed to her. And the way that was distracting from the issue and the way in which Coleman played out, the whole thing played out, she was unhappy with that. So she kind of resigned for a couple of reasons. I want to clarify, though, that Coleman technically did not reverse the decision, and that's what pro-life forces need to be aware of right now. And that's an understandable mistake because Planned Parenthood is masterful at propaganda and they've been muddying the waters. What she said, what Nancy Brinker said in her supposed retraction was that the only modification to what my original story reported was this, and that it's that politically motivated investigations, such as the congressional investigation, which you could say was politically motivated, do not fall under this policy. So they won't just eliminate a grant recipient because of what would be classed as a politically motivated investigation. However, that doesn't change anything if you read and parse that statement, because there's these five criminal investigations. So Planned Parenthood does not get out of this necessarily. She also said they would honor existing grants. They had always said that. My initial report said that, that those five grants were going to be honored through 2013. What is the question now is future grants. Now, what Planned Parenthood is going to do is push hard, and they're going to send a lot of grant applications to Komen. And Komen's going to have to evaluate that and figure out if they're going to be more prepared to fight this war the second time with the new grant applications. And that's when we'll see, until we see the results of the next round of grant applications and what Komen does with those, we won't know if this is a loss or a victory. And that's kind of where we stand right now. Komen did not reverse course, but they handed Planned Parenthood a major propaganda victory by apologizing, by saying, you know, by basically rewarding Planned Parenthood's thuggish behavior, just to take the heat off them, just to kind of cool the fires a bit.
And in the end, who loses in this battle?
Well, women always are going to lose because, you know, Planned Parenthood, anything that makes them stronger and puts money in their coffers ultimately kills somebody. They are a death operation. That is how they do it. And, you know, they've managed to muddy these waters with these lies saying only 3% of our business is abortions. Well, all those numbers are nonsense. If they do one abortion and hand out 9 condoms, then they could say only 10% of their business is abortions. So their numbers are garbage because something like 37% of their revenue is derived from abortion patients. If they can damage Komen, which they have, but more importantly, if they could scare other people as they tried to with AT&T about 20 years ago, if they can keep people from severing their relations with Planned Parenthood, then that's a win for Planned Parenthood.
Well, Thomas, you've done a great job of getting us up to speed on this story. We'll continue our coverage in the National Catholic Register. Stay tuned. Keep your eyes on the website at ncregister.com, and we'll keep you all up to date. And Thomas, thank you so much for being with us today on Register Radio.
Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you, Thomas, from me as well. Dan, maybe things will calm down a little bit on our next show, but somehow I'm doubting it, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been great being with you, Tom.
And thanks to all of you for joining us today on Register Radio. For all of us at The Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is made possible by donations from generous listeners like you. To bless us with your gift, visit ncregister.com and click on the Donate tab or call 205-568-9756.